It is time for another edition of the JMRA podcast. I am your host, Joe Montana's right arm, guiding you along as we take a look at the National Football League and another week of fun-filled action. It's week 12. It's the Sunday slash Thanksgiving recap. In fact, we're going to do something a little different today because of last night's proceedings and actually some of the stuff on Thanksgiving. We're going to split this one up into two parts. So this first part here, we're going to go over what happened last night in Denver and also the Thanksgiving games. But first, the rundown on social media. You can check us out on the web, joemontanasrightarm.com. Also on Twitter, at joemsrightarm. And Facebook, and Vine, and Tumblr, all this stuff. So you can catch us on the social media universe at some point, somewhere, etc. Now, it is time to get to the game of the week. We stop in the Mile High City where the Denver Broncos gave the New England Patriots their first loss of the season, 30-24 in overtime last night. And, well, hey, look, I mean, this game is going to have some potentially damaging ramifications for the Patriots, which we will get to in a second. But, look, let's pick up from where this game really tilted. It was 21-7 in the fourth quarter. The Patriots had just scored on a 63-yard touchdown pass from Brady to Brandon Bolden on what looked like a wheel route of some kind, and they were able to score on that. They increased their lead to two scores. Now, the problem in this game comes down to one simple thing. You're going to talk about the Gronkowski injury. Obviously, that was not helpful at all for the Patriots side, but this game comes down to the Chris Harper fumble. Chris Harper is filling in for Danny Amendola, who is in turn filling in for Julian Edelman, punt returning for the Patriots. As a result, Harper's back there to field the punt. He muffs the punt. The Broncos recover, and then from there they go in the score to make it 21-14 early on in the fourth quarter. That makes it a new game because at 21-7, the Patriots were going to get the football right near their 40-yard line or so, and if they get a first down, okay, that makes things all the more difficult for the Broncos to win the game. So, because at that point, you're looking at maybe the Patriots score, maybe they tackle on a field goal, whatever. You give up that touchdown there, that changes the entire tenor and mentality of the game. So, a big, big, big muff and turnover for the Patriots and Chris Harper, an undrafted rookie that the Patriots needed to bring in off the practice squad because of all the injuries at wide receiver. And that's the thing with these games, you know, when you start suffering all of the injuries that the Patriots have endured, essentially those critical moments where the Patriots have been so rock solid, you're going to bring in guys who are going to make the mistake that you're not accustomed to making. So that's, to me, that was the biggest play of the game, hands down. Elsewhere, look, I think a few things need to be gleaned from this contest, including the following. I think there's a chance we may have seen the last of Peyton Manning for the Broncos this season. I mean, I think this is starting to look a little similar, while the moving parts are a lot different from what happened in San Diego. I think this situation is starting to look a little similar to what happened in San Diego about a decade ago with Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees. You have a veteran quarterback who has shown to be pretty effective, and in the case of Peyton Manning, one of the greats of all time. And the organization is kind of struggling to see that they have a rookie, well, not a rookie quarterback, but a first-year guy. The organization is struggling to see that they have a quarterback that can run the system better than Peyton Manning. And maybe they're not struggling with it. They may have already come to this realization, and appears to some degree that they have. I don't know that you should bring Peyton Manning back. I mean, plantar fasciitis. Look, I'm not going to be that guy and say, oh, I have foot problems, so I can tell you what's going on. They showed the injury last night on NBC, okay? that injury is not going to go away in 2 weeks, okay? And a guy dropping back and planning and doing all those things, that's just going to intensify the pain at some point. So the only thing to do with that is to give it rest, and I think it's going to take, a couple of months, let alone a couple of weeks, for that pain to subside. And if you're the Broncos, and this is working well for you, why are you going to mess that up? And I think that's really the big deal here out of this game, besides the Rob Gronkowski injury, which we'll get into now. Look, I don't know what the NFL is going to do here, because, and they're not going to do anything immediately, obviously, in terms of fining guys or whatever. How long are you going to let defenders hit guys low? And yeah, they will call penalties if guys get engaged too low. But you have a player in Rob Gronkowski who literally no defender can tackle except for diving at his legs. And it's really unfortunate, and you wonder now if he's going to be able to come back anytime soon for the Patriots. The initial reports were the Patriots were cautiously optimistic that it wasn't as serious as it looked. Based off of Gronkowski's reaction, it did not look good. And one of the other things, too, to take note, there were two other plays earlier in that game. You could see right away the Broncos were gunning for the knees, not only of Gronkowski, but of Scott Chandler. They were hitting them low because those guys are so big. So there's no other way for them, in their view, to tackle those guys. So they're going to play dirty and hit them low. And that's what it is. It's a dirty play. It's a Bush League play. And, unfortunately, the league isn't going to legislate it to the fullest extent. Because, look, when you have a guy as great as Rob Gronkowski is as a football player, it shouldn't come down to this. I mean, Patriot fans live in fear out of this guy getting hit in his legs. And that's crazy because, you shouldn't have to watch a game worrying about that. But that's where we're at right now with the Patriots and Rob Gronkowski. And if he is out for an extended period of time, I mean, that's it. I would have to say you can't. That's an injury the Patriots can overcome. They can overcome a lot. And they may have to overcome the injury to linebacker Dante Hightower as well, who left the game last night with a knee injury that looked a little similar in terms of what happened, and you hope that he can come back from what he has. Look, the Patriots here, I'm thinking you have to get the 13 wins to probably get a bye this year. I think they'll be able to do that. But, man, it is going to be very tough for them to get to the Super Bowl and then win a Super Bowl under these circumstances. I can't remember a team losing skill guys in this manner. It's somebody every week. They literally have lost their top four receivers now to injury. Rob Gronkowski, Deion Lewis, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola. That's, boy, I don't know how, you look at some of these upcoming games, they're going to be tough matchups for the Patriots. Going to the Jets, that's obviously a tough matchup if you don't have those four guys trying to get open and score and all that stuff for you. So that's a really big injury for the Patriots in terms of Gronkowski, but it's the cherry on top, if you want to put it that way, as far as the injury bug for the Patriots. I mean, literally, the last man standing at this point is Tom Brady. And you wonder how long he'll be able to hold up because he's starting to take some massive hits back there in the pocket because he's holding onto the ball a long time. And that's really a tough, tough deal. As for the Broncos, C.J. Anderson, 113 yards rushing, a couple of touchdowns as well, including the game winner. Brock Osweiler, 23 of 42, 270 yards, a touchdown and interception. Bizarrely enough, Tom Brady was also 23 of 42. He threw for 280 yards and three touchdowns, no picks. Again, I think if this Gronkowski thing is of any length, which I would assume he would be out this week against Philadelphia, but if it's of any length, I mean, it's a massive problem. There's no question about it. Massive problem for the Patriots. Are they good enough to get to 13 wins without him? Probably. But when you start looking into the playoffs and taking a look at how some teams are playing right now, who wants to play Kansas City at this moment in time? I know Alex Smith is Alex Smith, but still, they're playing well. it's a tough matchup. I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult for the Patriots to get back to the Super Bowl and win it if they don't have these guys. It's just not going to be possible. One last thing here on the Broncos-Patriots game, and that deals with the officiating. The officiating in this game sucked, okay? It wasn't bad. It sucked, okay? And I'm not saying, look, it has nothing to do with who's getting the calls. Now, if you're watching this game in a vacuum, if you're a Patriots fan, obviously you think the calls were anti-New England for conspiracy theory angle, whatever. If you're the Broncos side, we benefited, so it was great. No, the officiating in this game sucked. And here's why it's bad, okay? Let's go, forget about the holding penalty for 1 second, because I'm going to get to that. The play at the end of regulation where the Patriots are driving and they have about 19 seconds left and the clock is running because the Broncos were issued an excess timeout, okay? An excess timeout is essentially when you're out of timeouts, you're granted an excess timeout as an injury timeout. They have to run the play clock back to 40. The clock is supposed to wind. Well, in the eminent wisdom of the officiating crew last night, no one bothered to tell Tom Brady or Bill Belichick this. So when you watch the game, it looks Tom Brady's operating in that final drive like he has 2 minutes when he has 19 seconds to complete a pass and get the Patriots in the field goal range. And you saw Bill Belichick's reaction, like, what's going on? Like, nobody communicated that to the Patriots, which is a major problem. And again, a sign of bad officiating. The holding call in the end zone, of course, one of the key plays in that game, 21-17, the Patriots leading. And, of course, you have the play where Alan Branch sacks Brock Osweiler, and in return, there is a holding call. Now, if the Osweiler sack stood, that would have made it about third and goal from near the 20 for the Broncos. They probably weren't going to score at that point. You have two downs. I mean, at best, you're looking at maybe a reasonable try for a touchdown on fourth down, but it would make things really difficult for them on a third and goal from the 20. Look, the problem I have with that call is you've got to be consistent. And that's the thing. I don't care that holding calls are called this way or that way, but you got to make sure that your crew has a consistent idea. If you're going to let them play, let them play. If you're not going to let them play, don't let them play. It looks like they just can't make up. Like, one guy has a different interpretation of what holding is versus the other guy. And it's just like, that leads to a lot of questioning. And that penalty to me against Patrick Chung in the end zone was complete crap. I didn't think it was any good. I thought the call was dreadful. You just can't make those type of calls on a repeated basis. I mean, when you look at how the rest of the game is officiated, when you look at how Rob Gronkowski is officiated, it just looks like there are a bunch of different guys calling different games out there. And that's totally counter to what should be happening in an NFL game. The other thing, too, the OPIs, the offensive pass interferences called against Rob Gronkowski, this to me comes down to one simple thing. If you're the NFL, okay, you can't have one guy officiated differently from everybody else. And that's what's happening right now. If I'm Rob Gronkowski and I'm running, right, and I'm getting jammed, and I'm getting jammed, and I'm getting jammed at 5 yards, and I fight at the 5 yards to get out of it, that's offensive pass interference? That's what they're saying. They're saying he has no right to fight back. That's what they're saying. He has no right to do anything. I mean, that to me is crazy. Now, where he runs straight into guy and pushes guys and pushes off with two hands, we've seen that. That he can't do, obviously. And we've seen that on a few occasions. But it just seems like the norm this year with him is, okay, we're not going to let him get away with anything. So, yeah, unless he gets a clean release, it's offensive pass interference. He's not getting the call, and that's incredible to me. I mean, again, it's all about consistency, and I think the officiating across the board this year has been bad. It's not just been, it just hasn't been bad in Patriot games. Obviously, you look at the game last Monday night with New England and Buffalo, it obviously worked out in favor of the Patriots. So, you know, whether it's conspiracy theory or not, I don't think the NFL is that sharp to put together a conspiracy theory with their officials against the Patriots. I mean, based off of what we've seen from the league, are you that sure that they'd be able to pull that off? I don't think so. It just looks to me like you have a bunch of guys that, I don't want to say don't know what they're doing, but certainly don't have a lot of confidence in what they're doing. Yeah, like, look at that ineligible receiver play last night where I think it was Cameron Fleming checked into the game as an ineligible receiver, and he got called for an illegal substitution into the game. Like, those are two referees who aren't talking to each other. That's crazy to me. All these guys have to know this stuff, and it looks like it's a bunch of different guys calling a different game. It's independent contractors, basically. Just guys just operating for themselves and no cohesiveness at all. It's the only of the four major American sports where, you know, we have to hear constantly from the vice president of officiating. No one should know who Dean Blandino is, but we keep hearing from Dean Blandino because the officiating stinks. That's why we have to keep hearing from Dean Blandino. I don't want to hear from Dean Blandino at all, but that's what's happening because the officiating is a sham. And he was on NFL Network again last night because he has to explain rules that not only does the American public not know, but I wonder if the coaching staffs know, and it sure appears that some of the coaches don't know. So, some of the officials don't know. So a lot of problems with the officiating from last night's game, just dreadful. But in total, the Broncos won, and the Patriots, hey, they had their chances, could have put the game away, they did not. Let's transition into the three Thanksgiving games here. The Eagles get bombed by the Lions, 45-17. Just, the Eagles are a hot mess. They're hot trash right now. 28-point loss on Thanksgiving Day, and this game was over by halftime. It was over by halftime. Calvin Johnson had three touchdown catches. A lot of the coverage on television, in particular by Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, were wondering why Eric Rowe, the rookie cornerback, was not receiving help in the secondary for defending Calvin Johnson. And the answer that was given by Chip Kelly, I just saw this morning, was that, well, you don't necessarily know if we were trying to play zone. Come on, man. I mean, really? Come on. I mean, he could in theory be right, but come on. There are easier ways to guard guys and double team them than doing something like that. I'm starting to wonder if Chip Kelly knows what he's doing in the defensive side of the ball. Like, you definitely get the impression from him sometimes that, hey, I'm just worried about my offense and looking good on O, and yeah. That's it. That seems to be the deal with Chip Kelly, and that's unfortunate because the Eagles as a team and a franchise deserve a lot better than getting run into the ground by a guy who's just going to leave to go to college football anyway. He's going to go back to college at some point. It's going to happen. Just pick your year at this point. So the Eagles fall to 4-7. Incredibly, they have not totally been erased from the NFC East race, which we'll get to down the line because the Giants have no ability to take care of their own business. Speaking of the NFC East, the Carolina Panthers 33, Dallas 14. The Panthers took advantage of a rusty Tony Romo. Romo subsequently was knocked out of the game, and his season is over after suffering a hairline fracture in his collarbone. His wife's reaction, she was at the game, TV caught her, said it all. I mean, I think if you're a Cowboys fan, not only is this your worst nightmare, but this is also a glimpse of the future. Because, you know, I think the Cowboys here during the offseason have to take a real hard look at coming up with a far better backup plan than what they have in place now. You look at last year, you know, people forget because of how the season played out and how it ended for the Cowboys. They won a playoff game. They lose that close one in Green Bay. Tony Romo got hurt last year too. This is not a one-time deal. So they're going to have to go back to the drawing board here and find a way to have a backup quarterback that can be competitive. And maybe Matt Castle under a full year of the system can be that guy. But man, it is really asking a lot. Asking a lot to try to get Matt Cassel as the primary backup for Tony Romo to play at a level where Dallas can be a competitive winning football club. This team, I mean, they look terrible without Romo. And now, you know, if you're the Cowboys, I wouldn't push too hard here on, you know, trying to win games and stuff down the end of the line. I would really focus perhaps on maybe taking a look at, look, it's crazy to suggest anybody tank, but if there was a team that ever needed a top 10 pick, this is a team. They need it. They really do. Maybe not even at the lines, but whether it's a secondary, whether it's a skill position area, they need help. And, you know, trying to play yourself into a divisional race, you're essentially chasing your tail at this point based off of the way the NFC East has been. Carolina improving to 11-0, undefeated. I mean, they're for real. It's just a matter of whether or not they can keep it together through the NFC playoffs. Because, you know, you look at the NFC playoff picture right now, you're going to have a potential second-round matchup against Seattle, maybe, possibly. That would make me nervous if I were a fan of the Carolina Panthers. Another thing that would make me nervous, seeing Green Bay come into town. So I think, you know, the challenge is there for Carolina. By no means is Carolina a slam dunk to get to, A, the NFC Championship game, and B, the Super Bowl. I think both of those will be challenging tasks for them. I think they're equal to it because, you know, Cam Newton is playing at a high level right now, and the defense is playing at a high level, I think, which is extremely crucial for them. Green Bay losing to Chicago 17-13 on Brett Favre night. This was one of the worst performances of Aaron Rodgers' career, in my opinion. 22 of 43, 202 yards, a touchdown and an interception. Bad loss for the Packers at home. They've now lost home games to the Bears and Lions, and that win last week against Minnesota, at least for the moment, has kind of been pushed to the back burner because they have now dropped a full game behind the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC North. A crushing, crushing loss for the Green Bay Packers. Look, can they rally and go 12-4? Absolutely. But I think you have to be very concerned about this team's ability to be a viable contender in the postseason. I think that's a major, major question mark. They don't have the weapons. And again, you know, we were talking about this earlier with New England. When you lose the guys who give you the edge, and by the edge I mean guys that are able to provide matchup concerns to the opposing team, that can create mismatches, makes you very plain Jane when you don't have that to bring to the table. So I think that's a very frustrating aspect for the Green Bay Packers right now. And they have not been able to get a lot out of that running game and Eddie Lacy. So that has put them at a disadvantage. And the Bears, meanwhile, are playing good football. I don't know if the Bears are going to get in the playoffs, but they're playing pretty well right now. And that is a tough, tough loss for the Packers. Like I said, they drop a game back in the NFC North race to the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, what we are going to do, as I said earlier, is we're going to get to the rest of the Week 12 slate on Sunday at some other point this week, probably on Monday night or Tuesday morning. We'll get to it and maybe loop in the Monday night game as well. Just a lot to talk about, and, you know, we got to break things up here a little bit. I don't want to drown you with football talk for an hour, as much as I'd love to. But anyways, have to bring this one to a close. Again, a reminder, you can check us out on social media at Joe M's Right Arm. JoeMontanasRightArm.com is the blog. And you can check us out on Facebook as well by simply searching Joe Montana's Right Arm. That'll do it for the podcast for today. Until next time, cross your fingers for Gronk. We don't want him out a long time. And by we, I mean football fans. Not because I'm a Patriots sympathizer. I'm an Eagles fan, but I'm a Patriots sympathizer. Get it right. Until next time, happy football, everybody.